Hello, everyone, and welcome to How to Ask for Major Gifts in 3 Easy Steps. I am delighted to be here today. I'm Brian Saber, president of Asking Matters. I think a bunch of you know me, but I know we've got new people. We have hundreds of you here today to learn more about major gifts. And I'm a big fan of major gifts, and I'm a fan of Peter, our presenter. I'm going to introduce him in a second, but to me, major gifts are what fuel your organization over time. And I do believe it's something everyone can do, and that sometimes it can sound more complicated or be presented in a more complicated fashion than necessary. So I always appreciate people like Peter who make it doable. Some of you know I teach a webinar called Major Gifts in 2 Hours a Week. And I do that specifically for the reasons Peter's going to outline, right? That this doesn't have to be, you don't have to be a university, and you don't have to be a major hospital. Most of us are not that. Certainly most of my career was spent in organizations that aren't that. So I'm delighted you are here with us today. For those of you coming in a bit late, you will get a link to the slides and the recording, both as an MP4 and an MP3 by tomorrow. Peter will also be following up with you. If you have any tech issues, type them in. And just to make sure you know where that questions box is, can you type in that box your organization and your position? Can you type that in? What hat are you wearing today? Are you a director of development, an executive director, a board member, another staff member, major gift officer? And what organization are you with? If you could type that in the questions box. It's great to know who's with us. And wonderful. We Vice President of Advancement. And because we're in GoToWebinar, which is a more formal webinar software, we will see all those answers and we'll share them with everyone throughout. Let's see, Assistant Director of Development, Director, Language Connection Foundation. I love that, Stephanie. Executive Director at Emerson Youth Pathway. Wonderful. So thank you all for typing in all these wonderful organizations. It warms my heart. And now I'm going to turn it over to our expert today, Peter Heller, who, by the way, I don't know, Peter, if your screen is up, but Peter's currently sporting some facial hair there, but it is the same Peter who I've known for a long time and is a super consultant and fundraiser in our field. He founded his own group, I don't know how many years ago now, Peter, a long
almost
time.
Great.
How went when?
Almost 20 years.
When I thought so, just about, yes. And we met a long time ago now, and he does incredible work for a lot of organizations and really knows how to distill this information down to something that's actionable and helps move organizations ahead. I'm a big fan of Peter's, and I'm delighted to have him here with us today. So I'm going to turn the screen over to Peter now, and I'll be watching the questions box forum because there are just so many of you on today. If you have questions, just type them in. We'll try and take them when we can. Peter will ask you questions, and I'll help read out the information that you share. So let me give Peter the screen now. And there you are. And you're off and running, Peter. Thanks for joining us.
Okay. Well, I may know a lot about major gifts. I know a little about pressing the right button. So I hope you can see the right screen, Brian.
Yes, everything is set. You're off.
Okay.
Off and
wonderful.
Running.
It's great to be here. I'm going to jump right in because I want to convey a lot of information and have everybody who's here today really feel differently about the approach to major gifts by the end of this hour. So we're going to jump right in. I'm going to first say a few things about the Heller Fundraising Group so you have some context for what's going on and where we're coming from. And let's see. So we actually, we're a for-profit company, and yet we still have a mission. We build abundance for our nonprofit clients through customized consulting and training for successful capital campaigns, insightful feasibility studies, and prosperous major gift programs. And all of those things really work together. Today, we're talking about major gifts in particular. This is a smattering of the organizations we've worked with. We're officially located in New York City, and we've done a lot of work up and down the East Coast, and are also working both nationally, a tiny bit internationally. But you know, the pandemic really obviously changed that for a lot of us and us as well. This is our core team. We have about actually 25 people working with us. A lot of those are our collaborating consultants who run our projects for us. This is as many as we could fit on a slide for right now. Just to jump all the way to what you might want to take away from this, when you have a chance to go to the HellerFundraisingGroup.com website, there's a major gift toolkit that is very much in sync with Brian's work and thinking on Asking Matters and how you do fundraising. So you may want to download some of those tools. And we'll also be offering a free two-part follow-up training where we're going to do more hands-on work with you on how to do major gifts. And that we'll discuss that at the end. It's going to be in December. And there's my email address, Peter at HellerFundraisingGroup.com. Don't be shy about reaching out. If you have a question, large or small, I'm happy to do my best to answer it. So the Heller Fundraising Group really does these things. I mentioned them in the mission statement, but here they are in little boxes. We do feasibility and planning studies, capital campaigns. We help a lot of nonprofits figure out the right structuring for their development office and how to increase the amount of money they're raising by the changing around the structure. And we create major gift programs and support nonprofits on how to really institutionalize those and raise significant money. And just like today, we do training and coaching. So let's now dive into major gifts. And I just want to say we're in a moment, we're going to start working on these three specific steps. And we've broken them down into the steps to really make the process easy to grasp and so that you know what you need to do at what point of the process and you can really wrap your brain around it. And in order to get into those steps, I wanted to define major gifts. And I haven't like had a deep conversation with Brian about this, but I think we're pretty much on the same page. Today we're talking specifically about gifts from individual donors. The dollar amount can vary from organization to organization and donor to donor. We do advise that you set some parameters so you know that what you're talking about. And we find that it's 10 or 20% of donors are giving 80 to 90% of the support for major gifts. And really, any nonprofit, and this is a pretty brash statement, I think, but any nonprofit that doesn't have that scenario with getting a lot of money from individual donors is probably not maximizing their effectiveness in connecting and building relationships with their members of their community, however that community is defined. And major gifts can exist with or without a capital campaign, and we'll discuss more about that in a little bit. So what does this mean, with or without a capital campaign? So the process is a little bit different, and we'll discuss that, but it's really, really important in the view of the Heller Fundraising Group that almost every nonprofit engage individual donors in significant dollars for their organization. And the dynamics of the conversation are different in a capital campaign, but at the same time, it's really the same process of engaging in conversation and helping people reach for something that's really transformational for them and for the organization. And Brian, we're going to stop for a minute, as you know, and hand things over to you to do a little poll to see.
Yes. So I'm going to launch a poll on the screen. Should be in process now. What's the number one thing that gets in your way? What is the number one thing? We'll give you about 10 more seconds. Often it's pretty clear right away. What is it? Lack of time, you don't know what to do, don't have major gift prospects. And for some reason you can't act, you're not seeing the poll on the screen. You can type it in the questions box, but it's great if it's in the poll because then we get some results to share with you. Let's see, we've got 2/3 of you voting already. Lack of time. Okay, in the interest of time, we just hit 70% of you. I'm going to close and share the results. Okay, here you go, Peter. What are your thoughts? All right.
So the winner is, we don't know what to do. Well, you've come to the right place, right, Brian? Next, we don't have major gift prospects. That is always an interesting thing to discuss. Lack of time, I totally get that. And there's other.
And maybe for those of you who typed in other, maybe type in the questions box what that other is.
Yeah, we'd love to know. And Brian, did you want to ask the group about sort of what, if they are doing major gifts, what the label is?
Sure. And, you know, and Peter, not surprisingly, we are, and I can put myself back on camera while I'm talking. Not surprisingly, we're very in sync in all of this. And so I appreciate hearing what you have to say. And I hear these same things about not knowing what to do, not having prospects, lack of time. So one of the pieces here is establishing a threshold, as you mentioned, because we can't. Who is it who came up with the expression? It could have been Jerry Panis, our pantheon, who said, "If you set out to cultivate everyone, you'll cultivate no one." Right. And it's a problem in fundraising where we want to pay attention to a lot of people and really important to set that threshold. So Peter had talked about it. I'm going to propose it, this question of what is a major gift for your organization? Do you have one? And if you have a number, can you type that in the questions box? And while you're doing that, I'm going to read out. We did get a couple of other answers to the number one thing that gets in the way. Mike said playing whack-a-mole. All get that right. You see it, whack it, whack it. We're putting out fires. Major donor fatigue, Adriana says, not having a process for it. So you may know what to do in terms of the donor, but not have a system. Getting access to major donor prospects can be challenging. And now in terms of what that threshold is, I'm seeing everything from 1,000 and 2 and 5 to 20,000, a couple of 20s and 100K from Corinthia. And I'm wondering what your organization is. Another 5,000. So a number of you in that $5,000 range. Peter, if you want to take it away from there and comment on that, I'm also going to now hide the results so you can continue with your presentation.
Sure. And are we seeing my screen again?
Yeah.
Okay, thank you. You're my tech advisor.
I am happy to
see you. Before I get into this slide, I just want to say, it's really interesting to hear that wide variety of major gift level. I'm always inspired and curious about the ones that are up at the top there. And I generally, when the Heller Fundraising Group works with any nonprofit as our client, we really challenge them to think of a major gift as $5,000 or more. Honestly, regardless of the size of the organization, it may take some time to get there for some of you, but we feel that that's really the threshold that's going to make a big impact and is a smart amount for you to spend this sort of one-on-one time.
Peter,
so yeah,
I was just to share one thing, and I promised you I wouldn't interrupt. Often, but when people ask, you know, what's the definition of a major gift? I often say it's a gift worth the time and money to cultivate and solicit, because we have to act like a business, right? And so, in total agreement with you, if I see an organization say $500, I think it's probably costing you more than that, right? You want to be looking at donors who either make that level gift, a certain level gift already, or can make it, because you're going to put a fair amount of time into it.
Right.
And so analyzing that. On the other hand, if you set the level really, really high, I'm assuming for those who have 100,000, let's say, that there are still people under 100,000 who are being cultivated and solicited, but they may be in what they call an annual fund program. They may be so large that they split it out.
Absolutely. I'm down with that. I'll just say that, let's be clear, every gift is really important in that the donor is trusting you and supporting you with their money. And we're just talking about the ways to improve your financial situation and connect with people who have the capacity to give you more money. Doesn't mean that the other gifts and those other people are any less important. So in terms of the types of fundraising, we've broken it down into like transactional and transformational. And no big surprise, transformational is where we really encourage our nonprofit clients to focus their attention, because it's based on building relationships. You really need to listen to what matters to the donor. You want to connect on your shared passions. You're going to get higher results. And this concept of stop and think is that if you're asking for an amount that somebody can say yes to quickly, you probably haven't asked for a transformational gift. Nothing wrong with getting a gift that somebody can say yes to right away, but it's not transformational, or what I'd call a major gift. So here's the three steps, and we're going to spend the rest of our time going through those steps. There's three of them. So at the end of each one, I'm going to pause and leave some time for questions if there are any. So you don't have to hold your questions till the very, very end. And here we go. So what are the three steps? The first is getting organized. The second is schedule your meetings. And the third is meet and ask for the gift. And we say, and repeat, because this is a process that you're going to do over and over again. Is any one of you ever 100% organized on your work or personal life and you just set it and forget it? Not me, and I kind of doubt you too. So you have to keep organizing, looking at your plans. You cannot get a major gift without scheduling a meeting. Of course, there's caveats where, you know, people call somebody, literally cold call somebody and get $1 million. That story's happened to somebody I know. Somebody sends email, get big gifts. But in general, you need to schedule a meeting, whether it's a Zoom meeting, a phone meeting, or ideally an in-person meeting. And then you need to meet and ask for the gift. So here we are, we're at step one. Let's get into the details of getting organized. This is really something that we could spend the entire hour working on. And in fact, if you do join us for the free follow-up training that my team and I are doing in December, and more about that at the end, we're gonna get into this in much more detail and hold your hand on it. So the first thing you need to do is have a list of potential donors. And I think a good number of you in the poll said you didn't have major gift prospects. So you need to focus on gifts that will make a difference and set the bar, just like we talked, you know, I said $5,000, Brian had a slightly different definition of a gift that's worth the time. And when you're organizing your list, it's very important to figure out a format that works for you. We always suggest using this top prospect report. It's also in those free tools that I mentioned at the beginning that's available on our website just to help you out. And there's a few things about this. It's simply a spreadsheet. You want to put the first and last name of the person there. Once you've got your prospect list, probably the most important part of this is to make it simply not just a stale static list, is to put a date for each person that you're going to follow up with, and then what that next step that you're going to do in that date. So here you've got a certain number of people each month. This is a small list, but let's say in June of that year, you had three people you're going to reach out to, and you can see in the next steps, there were specific things, you know, a phone call to set a meeting. Next one, I'm going to send an annual appeal letter. The other one, actually, we need to have a staff meeting first to discuss some things about how to reach out to this person. I want to address the issue of, before we get to the gift table, I want to address the issue of, I don't have any potential donors. I don't have any major gift prospects, because that's a big challenge for a lot of people. Again, it's something that takes a bit of time and effort to, first of all, there's the mindset to get around the idea that we don't know anybody. There's nobody in our community. There's people in almost any community. And we suggest doing brainstorming with a small group of leaders. It's an executive director or an executive director plus a development director, looking at your current donors to see, are there some that rise to the top? Once you've done that conversation internally, have a conversation with your board. We do this all the time. It works really well on Zoom. If you have a staff member, like literally put up a spreadsheet and have a conversation with, you know, maybe not the entire board at once, maybe three or four people, and just start brainstorming on names of people that they know either personally or professionally. A major donor program can be built with just 10 names to start. You don't need hundreds of names, but you have to do the process and you have to be bold. So once you've got these other steps, a really important part about getting organized is developing a gift table, whether it's for a capital campaign goal or an annual campaign. You want to know the dollar amount of money that you're striving for. And again, this is, I'm sure many of you have seen a gift table. It's one of our favorite tools. Again, we have one that's on our free tools on the website if you want help with one of those. We're always dividing this into three levels. And I would say that for today's purposes, and this is a gift table for a $500,000 goal, could be for a campaign, or it could be for an annual goal that you need to raise. And for today's purposes, we're looking at the major gifts and the leadership gifts, which is just kind of another way to say major gifts at a somewhat higher level. You can see here that this organization has defined major gifts as $5,000 up. We have four levels, and these are the gifts that are going to have the biggest impact on your organization. So it's really important to put together a gift table for yourself, and then you'll see right in that middle column the number of prospects that you need to get to that goal based on, we're using a 3-to-1 ratio. Some people use a 4-to-1 or a 2-to-1, but I like 3-to-1 for this. So you can look and you can see, once you start to brainstorm on who might our major gift prospects be, do we have enough to reach the goal? Do we think those people are going to give at the levels that we need? And you can see here that's just looking at those two columns there. And you'll basically be able to figure out if you're going to get to your goal by working on these numbers, and you can always adjust them up and down, but you want to deal with reality here. Very important in getting organized is determine who is going to cultivate and solicit the donors. Let's talk about that for a moment. Some people with us today have very large organizations, some have very small organizations. Regardless, you need to be clear on who is going to do this work. And you need to be honest and clear on how much time each of those people have to do the work. Lack of time was one of the factors that got in the poll that got in the way of people doing the major gift process. Once you know how many, who's going to do it, you want to calculate how many meetings can happen each month. And we use this table here. Again, it's in those free tools I mentioned. This is a really helpful way to think about it. We just came up with it a number of years ago when one of our clients was like, well, how long is it going to take for us to do this work? And we were like, well, oh, we haven't thought of it in that way. Let's look at it like this. So what's really great about this is let's look at that, where that arrow is in year two. So modest, energetic, and dedicated staff, those are basically different levels of organizational ability to have meetings. So modest would be an organization that could have 4 meetings a month. Energetic is 8 meetings, and a dedicated staff person is 13 meetings. I'll just say as an aside, you know, Brian said something at the very beginning about, you know, not needing to be a university, et cetera. I actually worked at Columbia University in New York City for 10 years. It was an amazing experience. It taught me a lot of what I've now been able to share with my team that helps nonprofits and with the nonprofits that we work with. And as a major gift officer at Columbia University, I was told I had to have 20 meetings every month. I did it. It was really hard work. We never wish that on any one of our clients, no matter how sophisticated they are, which is why we put the highest dedicated staff at 13. That's a lot of meetings for a month, and you can raise a lot of money doing that. You can actually raise good money with the modest. So just to finish up on this table here, you figure out how many monthly meetings you can have by analyzing how much time either the single person or the group of 2 or 3 people who are going to do this can have. Then you'll know how many meetings you can have per year after you know the months. We then get really conservative here to be careful. We take that annual number of meetings and we assume that only half of those are going to be solicitations. And we're going to get into that, the reasons for that in a couple minutes. One reason, though, is simply some of those meetings are with the same person more than once. The other thing is you don't want to ask the first time that you meet with somebody, if at all possible. That has a lot to do with this difference between transactional and transformational giving. And then let's assume that only half of the people who you asked for a gift will come in with that gift in the year that you asked it. So you can see on that modest level, you've asked for 24 gifts in a year, you're going to get 12. And then depending on how much you ask in each gift, and this was, you can see easily, this each ask was a little bit more than $10,000, you can estimate how much money you will get at the end of the year. And you'll see it kind of, if you're doing your job well, it's going to go up year after year because you're going to develop closer relationships with people. You're going to find the people who have the higher capacity in your community. And anyway, this is a really exciting tool. I hope that you'll use it. And then the final part of getting organized is to determine your story and the case. This is something that we love getting into in a lot of detail. For today, I'm simply going to say you need to know what you're discussing with your donors about your organization, and most importantly, about the community that you serve, no matter how you define that community, and how the money that you're asking for is going to make that community, not so much your organization, but how it's going to make that community stronger by virtue of the gift that you're asking for. That's case in a very succinct nutshell. So, Brian, I'm going to pause now for just a moment and see if there are questions about getting organized before we dive into number two.
Yes, and there are. There are a couple of really good questions. The first one, I think you covered, Mike asked, how many top prospects should you manage at any given time? And I think you've covered that. I wanted to add one thing. I love all the metrics here. One metric I use, and I think the number's changing now, is I assume it's going to take 12 hours per prospect per year. And I base it on two meetings. And I think you intimated it, the two meetings, so we won't go into it further, but I always hope I'm not having just one. Now, since some of these meetings take place virtually rather than in person, it may take less time, but as a starting point and figuring out how many you can actually manage, I say 12 hours. I don't know if you've got a number on that, but that helps me calculate whether it's possible in terms of how much time I have for this.
Yeah, that's. I think I like that number. I mean, we always look at the kind of for each meeting, like an hour for your like research and for emailing or calling the person, and then an hour for the actual meeting. If there's travel involved, you have to add some more time, and then an hour of follow up to thank them and take some notes. So that's probably really accurate.
Yeah.
Okay. And I'll just say for Mike's question, you know, there's a difference between the number of meetings and the number of gifts and the number of prospects in anybody's portfolio. And you want to have it really, the number of prospects in an organization's portfolio or in an individual portfolio really depends on a number of factors that, like, let's just say, you know, anywhere from 50 to 150 is great. But there's more dynamics to that. Do we have one more question, maybe?
We have two more, actually.
Okay.
Evelyn asks, what if you never have the chance to have a phone call? Some donors are hard to get a hold of.
I love that question. So, look, if somebody's giving you a really nice gift year after year and they never want to talk to you, on the one hand, don't fight it. On the other hand, it's always good to see if there's a way to get around that. You can always ask in a new way. You could say, hey, you know, I'm hoping I could just have 15 minutes of your time to hear what's important to you. We find that shaking things up and trying to put a wrench in the system so that people realize, oh, wait, this person's now communicating with me in a slightly different way. Oh, that's interesting. I wonder what's going on. So we really try to break that down, but it takes some effort.
Yeah. And sometimes I switch. Well, I'm a big proponent of email. So many of you here know the asking styles in extroverts versus introverts. So I'm generally big on email. And if someone doesn't respond to the email, I get on the phone. You know, if they don't respond to phone, email, text, sometimes part of shaking it up. And some people you just won't reach. And at the end of the day, I think you'd agree, Peter, we're looking for the willing.
Yeah, absolutely. And we're going to get into that in just a minute about techniques for phone calls and emails.
Good, good. Can you share your opinions about wealth screening tools, Jennifer asks?
Yeah, we use Donor Search a lot. There's other really good ones. I find that it's really important and it's not the end of the story. So we like to work with every nonprofit we work with, we do wealth screening, and then we have some, you know, personalized ways we sort it based on our experience. But then the most important thing is to go over that with the nonprofit and hear what we call their homegrown insights and information and, you know, why isn't this person on the list? Or, hey, we know such and such, because that's really going to get you there. And then I could tell you many stories about people that we simply, like when I was doing major gift fundraising, where people I forgot to do any research on, and it ended up being fine because they're a human being and we just had a conversation. So Brian, why don't we move on, because we've got two more steps.
Yes. And just so you know, we're getting lots of questions, so we will try to answer them all at the end. Peter, I might implore you to stay on a few minutes later if you have that time to answer more of these, but I hand it back to you.
Yeah, I'm happy to do that. And again, I'm being sincere when I said, you know, please email me if there's any questions that you are burning and we haven't gotten to. So here we are. Step number two, schedule your meetings. Your goal is a face-to-face or Zoom-to-Zoom meeting. I would say Zoom is much more effective than a phone call or an email. Before the pandemic, I would never, ever, in a zillion years, even though I was already using Zoom, have suggested asking for a major gift over Zoom. It's now something that people do routinely. I still am a big believer in human beings need human contact. So if you're able to meet people, don't slough it off as a it's not really worth the time. It's definitely worth the time. The only way to get a meeting is to schedule it first. Kind of obvious, but the reason this is a specific step is that this is actually the hardest part of the process, and you need to focus attention on how to do this. And just like the question earlier about somebody who didn't respond and didn't want to talk to the phone, you can develop superpowers in this area. You want to use phone or email. As Brian said, text is fine. Also, sometimes depending on the type or level of relationship you have with somebody, be kind of, in my view, weird to get a text from somebody who you don't have a relationship with yet, but maybe not. Don't write a letter. I don't know if the people still write letters. I get mail, but it's not going to work. Don't write a letter, please. You're going to maintain your focus with that top prospect report from the first step so that you know who you want to meet with when, and it's not just whatever happens whenever. You want to be really focused. You want to write a phone and an email script for yourself. I think that phoning is still a really valuable way to connect with people. Sometimes you need to do both phone and email. Don't be shy about phoning. You want to practice phone calls with a colleague. It's really important. And even if you end up emailing somebody, eventually, if you're doing your process right, you're going to be sitting down talking to them or Zooming with them. And you need to have the facility to have the words about your organization and other things come out of your mouth. So practice. Don't make a phone call when you're not in the right mood. Find something else to do. Excuse me. And always follow the concepts for phone calls or concepts for emails, which we're going to get into right now. So we start with phone calls because they're a little bit more challenging. So, and then we'll get to emails in a moment. So here are our concepts. You want to state who you are. You want to ask how they are. Most salespeople will tell you, don't do that. It gets you off your game. I find that it's really important because it allows you to connect with the person. Find out, they'll tell you, oh, this isn't a good time. Ask if it's a good time. No, I'm, about to go to a doctor's appointment, but I'd love to talk to you. When can I talk? You want to state the purpose for your call. If you're saying you're from XYZ organization, a lot of people will initially think that it's a telemarketing call. No, there's a lot of less of those today, but you want to know that this is like a personal outreach. You want to get to asking for a meeting as soon as possible. You want to avoid having the meeting on the phone because you want to really build a relationship. The less you can say, the better. Maybe a little counterintuitive, but say as little as possible. once you get an agreement that they'll willing to meet with you, you want to confirm the time, say it out loud, figure out like, oh, can I email you to confirm, you know, just to state where we're going to meet or the time or the Zoom link. Or, you know, a lot of people are going to have reasons they don't want to meet with you. You need to get good at acknowledging and handling their objections. Okay, similar stuff for emails. Let's go over these concepts. Again, are you sending an email because you're avoiding picking up the phone? Eventually, you're going to have to talk to this person. So maybe think about a phone call. I do think emails are really a great way to start, especially, you know, as Brian said, there's various personality types and asking styles. And in today's world, email is a really great way to communicate. You want to pick a clear and short and personal subject line. Subject line is going to make a big difference. Like, for instance, you know, if I was emailing somebody who Brian had told me about, subject line might be Brian Saber connection. So it gets the person's attention. You want to keep the email short. Your first draft is definitely not short enough, I promise you. You want to start with a friendly phrase if you know the person, or connect the dots explanation if you don't know the person. Brian Saber suggested I reach out to you because of your interest in environmental X, Y, and Z. Jump right into your reason for writing. You don't want to give a long explanation of your organization. You want to say, I'm hoping we can meet to X, Y, Z. Make it as easy as possible for the person to say yes to a meeting, and make sure you have a next step, like looking forward to your reply. A lot of times you're going to have to follow up because they're not going to respond to the email, but you're going to keep at it. And that's one of those superpowers you can develop. We have a number of processes and concepts that most of the time, if somebody doesn't reply to the first email, we have a few phrases we use that they'll respond the second time. I'm just going to quickly go over these scripts, Brian, because I want to make sure we have time for a few more questions and I don't want to shortchange step three. When you get the slides, everyone, you'll see this is in there, but the blue is the essential part. You know, there's some of this is more appropriate for email, some is more appropriate for phone. You're all smart people, you'll know how to adjust which part kind of sounds right for an email or a phone, but the blue is really essential. It's like, I'm hoping we could schedule a brief meeting at your convenience so I can meet you in person and hear what's important to you in our community or about, you know, your time as a student at our school or whatever. You want it to be focused on the person in a genuine way so that you're curious about them and they feel that you're not just saying like, hey, I work at this organization, we need money, can I meet with you to get some? And if you do the process well, you actually will have in your first meeting a conversation that talks a bit about money, but isn't really asking them for a gift, because you're building a relationship to get to know them, because you genuinely want to hear what's important to them in your community. This is my favorite example of doing it wrong. So let's just look at this for a moment. The top email is the solicitor asking for a meeting. And you can see it says right there in the third line, Mike, I would like to meet you at your convenience to discuss the capital campaign. Bang. Totally not good. That's like, when can we have your money? So, and you'll see from the reply, this was a couple who was capable of giving at least a six-figure gift. Unfortunately, Rhonda didn't do that great a job, because in the reply, they said, we'd love to get together sometime just to catch up, but no need to do that over this organization's business. We'd like to make a $1,000 contribution to the capital campaign. This was a transactional communication. This is $1,000 gift is nice, but not from somebody who could give $100,000. Would they have eventually done that? I can't tell you, but this is not a good way to start that out. We'd like to start it out with, I'd love to hear about your perspective on our community and our plans. You're going to get a much better result. Brian, we now have time for a couple minutes of questions on this whole topic of scheduling your meetings.
So, Peter, I'm not sure that we got any. There was one, but I think it came in from Evelyn just before you showed those sample scripts for a phone call. So okay. I think we're set and you can continue on, but then we'll still pick up some of the other questions from before or after.
Okay. So we're hoping that I haven't put people to sleep and that you'll stick with us for the next 13 minutes and get some additional value. So if you're checking your email and not listening, now's the time to decide whether it's worthwhile to tune in. So here we go. So let's talk in step three, which is basically meeting the donor and asking. Some of you may be actually in a capital campaign right now. And if you are, you know, we'd love to know that. So feel free to type that in the questions or just to say, hey, yeah, we're doing a campaign and we're planning for one and we're trying to figure this out. As I said earlier, a major gift, or in our gift table, also a leadership gift, a gift is a gift, whether you're doing a capital campaign for building renovations or endowment or programs, or you're simply raising money for your annual operating needs, it's still a gift. However, when it's inside a campaign, it's a great opportunity for the organization to really work for transformation. And I love that word transformation when it comes to major gifts, because we're talking about doing something important that's going to serve your community really powerfully in the years to come. And that can get exciting for people when you're talking with them about major gifts. So there's similarities and differences. One of the challenges in the cultivation process, we're going to look at this in just a moment, when you have a campaign, is that most of the people who can give large gifts know that you have a campaign, and by virtue of that, they're starting to think about what they might do, so that when you go to them, you have to be really careful and clear on keeping that cultivation process going, because sometimes people will short circuit it by offering you a gift in the first meeting. It's absolutely fine, but because we believe that you're going to get larger gifts by keeping the cultivation going, it's important to pay attention to that when you're in a campaign. So a lot of nuance to that. Again, we work with our nonprofit partners on that very carefully, because it's a bit challenging. So here's what is happening in step three. You want to, once you've set your meeting, you want to write a strategic briefing, even if it's just you and the donor. You want to write down your thoughts on what you want to convey in the meeting. If there's two of you from the organization going to meet with a donor, or two partners, or meeting with two people, you want to be clear who's going to say what. So it's really important to write that down, and it gives you a lot of practice on how to think about this process. This point is really important. I've been making it a bit throughout, is not every meeting will be to ask for a gift. This depends on the stages of engagement. So let's look at those for just a moment. There's a lot of ways to think about this. This is one that we like. donors go through a process of relationship. At the very beginning, you might just have their name on a list and not have ever contacted them. That's the qualifying phase. Then you want to start reaching out and hopefully have some meetings with them. Maybe you're going to invite them to some of your events, you're going to send materials, etc. You're cultivating them. At the right time, you're going to ask for a gift. We generally, like Brian was saying earlier, we generally ideally like that to be the second meeting. Sometimes it could be 2 years later, so you've met with them for a whole long time. Eventually, so once you ask, eventually that gift is going to close. They're going to say yes to the amount. They're going to say yes, but only half of what you asked, or they're going to say no, and at which point then they go down to that drop or defer place. If they do say yes, you're going to steward their gift, and eventually you're going to resolicit them. So you're going to go through that process. And if you're towards the beginning of that process, we really encourage you not to ask too soon, but you should definitely ask for something. Often it's simply another meeting. If I was meeting with Brian, it's like, Brian, it's been so great to hear your views on our community and hear about your interest in our organization. I would be really grateful for the opportunity to sit down again with you in a couple months to update you on what's been going on with our organization, and in fact to possibly discuss a gift with you for support of our organization. You want to maintain your focus in the meeting using the gift table and the case, the story you're going to tell from Getting Organized. You can put that gift table in front of a donor to say, look, here's how we're thinking about how we're going to get to this $500,000 goal. And there's a lot of dynamics of how that conversation might work. Again, like the phone calls, you want to practice mock meetings with a colleague. It's a great way to get comfortable. You can also, if you have a donor who you're close to or a board member, you can say, look, I want to increase my skills on this. So can I come and meet with you and have a practice my meeting skills. And in fact, that's going to only bring them closer to the organization as well. You want to follow the concepts for meetings. Okay, well, what are the concepts for meetings? Here we go. Listen as much as you can. We all have a deficit for being listened to. So you want to ask intelligent questions that give the person information about you and the organization and your plans, but really leave it to them to tell you what they think about all that. You want to be honest. One way of being honest is like, geez, you know, I'm actually new to this process. I'm really excited to be talking with you, and please, you know, forgive me if I stumble a little bit on what I'm saying. And there's a lot of other things. You don't want to be salesy, for instance. You want to start your meeting with some casual chit chat to connect. You don't want to just jump right in. Like I said, you want to use intelligent questions to learn about your prospect. The more that you can ask questions and let them talk, the easier it is going to be to actually then a little bit later to ask for money or for your next meeting or whatever it is you're going to ask for. No matter what, make an ask. Like I said, for money, another meeting, continued dialogue, that's a good one. When you're asking for money, and this is nuanced, but we believe it's really a good idea to ask for a specific amount over a specific time for a specific purpose. Makes it a lot easier for the person to think about that gift rather than, geez, you know, we'd like a gift somewhere on this gift table for our organization. No, you know, we'd like you to consider a gift of $50,000 paid over 3 years for our, you know, youth exercise program. I don't know what it is. Shut up after asking. It's not nice to tell anybody to shut up, but in this case, tell yourself to shut up. Don't talk after you've asked for your gift. Once the person responds, you're going to state your agreements and next steps out loud. And we go through this actually the asking process in detail again and again with our nonprofits that we work with. So Brian, believe it or not, we're just about at the end. I'd like to, just before we get to the top of the hour, I'm happy to stay on for some questions. If you can post in the question area, Brian, the link to the Heller Fundraising Group website where we've got our follow-up training, that would be great. So if people want to join that, they can. We'll send an email out letting you know about that. But essentially, for anybody who's joined or registered, we're offering a two-part training in December that will hold your hand while you go through the details of this process to get you even more set up to set up a major gift program.
Peter, well, first of all, that two-parter for free is extremely generous. And I'm sure a lot of people are going to take advantage of that, especially given what we've learned today. There are a lot of questions. I don't know that we'll get to them even staying over, but
I can't see the questions, Brian, but did you posted that link?
Yes, I posted the link. I also posted your email since you said email you. So if you don't get to a question today, people can reach out to you directly for that.
Okay, so this final screen has our website and LinkedIn and YouTube and phone, and you can even, if you want to scan our Google business page and write us a 5-star review. Don't let me stop you. Cool.
I'm learning things here. Okay, so Peter, let's take a few of these. I like this from Joel. What are the questions that need to be asked when meeting a donor for the first time?
That's a great question. So
it really is.
I would write down a list for yourself of you want to find out what's important to them about your organization, if they already know it. If they're giving you $100 a year or $500 a year, you want to thank them and ask them why they're giving that. I find it's always good and also fun to ask somebody, tell me about your charitable giving. People are often really genuinely proud of it, so they'll say, they'll let you know where they've made, maybe they've given $1 million if they're super wealthy and name something somewhere, and you want to hear about that. And so questions are about giving and about what motivates them, what's important to them. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Brian.
Well, I love personal questions, actually, since we're trying to build a relationship. And I often start out with those, just trying to learn more about their family, their interests, what they did this past weekend, what they think about something that's going on in the world, as long as it's not too fraught. So I'm big on the personal. It's
great.
And then getting into, of course, the relationship to the organization, to philanthropy. But I love asking people personal questions and engaging them on that level. And they often then ask me and get to know me a little better. And since this is really about people giving to people and relationships, I think that's, at least for me, that's been an important part of my fundraising experience, that personal.
Yeah, I'd add one thing to that, which is that in the dynamics of any meeting, you as the representative of the nonprofit need to have in your head that this is my meeting, I'm in control of this. So if you start getting down the road of the person's grandkids and the blah, 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 that all great stuff, but if it goes on too long, you have to remind yourself, oh, wait a second, I have an objective here. It's my job to set the agenda and to switch things.
You know what? When we do our follow-up, I'm going to share with everyone, we have this arc of the ask, which shows how to go through a meeting intentionally, and it's a two-pager, and we'll send that along. It really gels with everything you are saying here, and it shows the need to move that meeting along no matter what.
Yeah, so we'll share that.
Yeah. Virginia, how many touch points and with what frequency do you recommend for attempting to schedule a meeting with a donor?
Yeah, that's a great question. So before we get into that, Brian, I just want to, because I know we're at the top of the hour, we're a minute after, I just want to thank everybody for sticking with us. I wasn't able to see your faces or anything, but I'm really grateful that you spent this hour with us, and I look forward to keeping in touch. So I think the question is really about, you know, if I were to put it in stark terms, like, how annoying am I allowed to be before I give up, or
exactly, you
know, before it's not, doesn't make sense. So I generally, like, you send out a first email or you make your first phone call, you get crickets, nothing happens. I generally, if I've done this on a Tuesday, I'll wait till maybe the following Monday, and I will, I don't know if I'm going to call again then, but I will email again then, and I will give it usually like 3 or 4 tries. And again, it varies person to person. You might wait a while, and we get into, with our clients, we get into the nuances of what you actually want to say in those follow-ups. It's not just like the same thing. You want to ask some very specific, simple questions, like this one, I mean, it works so well. It's so obvious, but I take the email, I forward that same exact email, and I write at the top, "Did my email below slip by you? Hope everything's okay." Many, many times people say, "Oh no, I was just busy. Let's blah, blah, blah."
Yeah, it's true. I mean, our donors' timetables and hours are very different often. Here's a phrase I've come to use if someone hasn't gotten back to me, and I do it by email, and that is, I don't want to take your lack of response as a no. I know you can be busy. You might be busy, so please just let me know. And often, to your point, people will say, "Oh no, I just got busy, and I'm sorry. I definitely wanted to get back to you." I say, I don't want to take your silence as a no.
I love that. Yeah,
right. And I have found that effective. We'll take two more, Brandon and Lori, and then we'll go. We still have more than 2/3 of everyone still with us, Peter. So I think you're providing
some fabulous information.
Brandon asks, when working within a time-restricted campaign, 2 to 3 months, et cetera, how do you determine the urgency in trying to cultivate a transformational donor? I guess, you know, what do you do in that short time frame?
Did he say 2 or 3 months?
Yes. A time-restricted campaign. I guess there's some super opportunity that's just come up. Something that has to be done, but maybe a match by a certain point or a challenge.
Yeah. I mean, 2 or 3 months is a very, very short time window. So I think that, you know, if it depends on the reasons and the deadlines, and you want to be focused on people who are, you know, going to be able to say yes more quickly, and whether, you know, does that yes mean you need dollars in your bank account by the end of that 2 or 3 months, or you need a commitment? And there's a lot of dynamics of that, but that's, I'm wishing you success with that, because it sounds very challenging, and that's all I can think of at the moment.
And here, this might be an easy one for you, but let me put it forth from Lauren. I know what I would say. At my organization, our major gifts have typically come in without solicitation. The majority of our fundraising happens via our annual appeal rather than any sort of capital. Is there any reason to be concerned that donors will be put off by a more direct ask for a large gift?
So I'm thrilled to know that that's happening because that's really great. The two observations I have is I doubt the people who are making those gifts are giving at their maximum potential without being asked, because that's simply the nature of the universe. And most people are not put off by being, I wouldn't be nervous or scared about doing that. And you can start by simply having a conversation that's focused on thanking them. Like, your giving has been amazing to us. I haven't had a chance to actually learn about more about you and your motivations. Could we have a, half hour phone chat? There's all kinds of ways to do that. I don't assume that people don't want to hear from you.
I think that's good. And I think that's a great way to end. I think we live in a very charitable world. Most people have more to give and more charity in their hearts than we've manifested. And that's often what drives me, is that I know what's out there.
Yeah,
So,
agreed.
Peter, thank you so much. This has been, I know, incredibly helpful for everyone. We're getting tons of thank yous here. Yes, once
Amazing.
you will receive a PDF of the slides, you'll receive the recording as an MP4 and an MP3. Peter will be sending something to all of you about all those free tools and the free two-part major gift workshop. You'll be getting all that in the next 2 days. So, if you have another question you really want to ask, you've got Peter's direct email here. So please take advantage of it. And of course, you can always ask me questions. I'm here at Asking Matters. Thank you, Peter, so much.
You're the
And
best, Brian.
best of luck to everyone here. This isn't easy work, even though we have easy in the title, but it's doable and it's really important. Thank you very much and have a great day.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye, everyone.